Welcome to Tackling the NFL, the only NFL podcast that would franchise tag Nyheim Hines if they could. Yep. Adam, I know you like that.
without any hesitation, Nyheim Hines is getting the tag.
Nyheim Hines is getting what the NFL equivalent of the Supermax would be, I guess, in the NBA.
Exactly. Oh, he's getting a gold jacket. He's already in the Hall of Fame. He'll be the greatest player on my team if I were building a franchise.
We would give Nyheim Hines the Patrick Mahomes contract.
Exactly.
So welcome back to Tackling the NFL. We took a week off. We are back. As I mentioned, franchise tags are beginning today. Today is the first day that teams can start putting franchise tags on players. They have 2 weeks to decide to do so or not. So none of that news is probably going to be coming out for a little while. Instead, we are going to get right into our offseason stuff. And what Adam and I decided to do was we really wanted to look back at how we thought every team did, I guess, this offseason or this past season and what they need to look for moving forward. So we're doing report cards because, I don't know, we spent a lot of time in school. It was just sort of on my mind.
Yeah, it's kind of all around us. We're constantly checking to make sure that nothing crazy has happened. But a lot crazy has happened this year in the NFL. So we'll be analyzing that, kind of gauging it. And we're starting off with a pretty terrible division.
Yeah, we're starting with the NFC East, mostly because it's the Eagles and Carson Wentz's division. We will be talking about them shortly. We have a special guest coming on to help us talk about them. Should be really fun. But we're going to break down every team in the division across a couple categories. Just let us know if there's other categories you want us to add, if there's anything you want us to talk about specifically, and we'd be happy to do it.
And also, if you disagree with any of our grades, feel free to let us know. We're always open to criticism. We know we're not always right. So just let us know.
Speak for yourself. I am. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, please. You can at me on Twitter or whatever you want to do. But let's get right into it. I think we're starting with the New York Giants as our first team. Adam, we got a lot of different categories for how we're doing grades. But first, we've got just how did you grade their offense for the New York Giants this year?
Yeah, so if anyone, one of our listeners has watched any Giants game this year, the Giants offense has been epitomized by that one Daniel Jones play where he's running down the field and then suddenly out of nowhere, he just trips and falls. God did not want him in the end zone and God did not want this Giants offense to succeed.
Adam, have you watched Ted Lasso? I know I've been telling you to watch it a million times.
No. I will not give in.
Adam, first of all, everyone has to watch it. It's so good. I finally got my mom to watch it and she won't stop talking about it now. Anyways, there is a scene in Ted Lasso where a player is doing drills and he trips on nothing and he says he was tripped by a ghost. I have to assume that's what happened to Daniel Jones.
And that's what happened to the Giants offense this year. 26 in offensive DVOA. They didn't show really any spark. Even when Sterling Shepard was back, they didn't see much out of Darius Slayton. They would have liked to see more out of their new guys, but it's just really boring when you have to have Devonta Freeman as your starting running back. So Wayne Gallman looked okay.
Just going to give him a little bit of credit.
But by the end of the season, he wasn't even getting started. So
yeah, that did make sense.
So hopefully with Saquon back, we'll see a little bit out of this offense. But until that happens, we're currently watching probably one of the most mediocre offenses in the NFL.
Yeah. What grade did you give them? If you had one?
Oh, sorry. I gave them a D-.
Okay. I forgot to do minuses or pluses. So mine are all just letter grades. I gave them an E. And I thought it was mostly because I was doing all my grades relative to expectation. And the single most important thing that happened to the Giants this year on offense was that I can't lock it in because we saw what happened to Josh Allen, but Daniel Jones certainly looks like a bust. And that means that they're probably going to restart after next year. It's just, you know, like they're stuck in a perpetual cycle. And because they didn't hit it on that quarterback with the number 6 overall pick, I can't give it really a much better grade than that.
And unfortunately, Daniel Jones does not have a Brian Daboll to help him out.
Agreed. Yes. My other notes, Jason Garrett was predictably bad. I mean, like, what else can you say? And I think they re-signed him, so he'll be back next year. Oh, and despite making the Pro Bowl, Evan Engram was not any good either.
No.
And he'll probably be gone, actually, after this offseason.
That was probably one of the weirder Pro Bowl selections of all time.
I mean, the entire tight end.
Not that I care.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
That I care. But it was just very strange to see Evan Engram, who isn't even, like, good. make the Pro Bowl?
For me, on the defensive side, it was the complete opposite. I actually gave them an A, and I graded pretty harshly for almost every team. And the reason I gave them an A was relative to expectations. Again, I tried to make my grades reasonable to coming into the season, what would you expect from this team? And what Patrick Graham did to this defense was just truly incredible. He really just turned around a bunch of players. He helped them play at their maximum potential. We've talked about it before. James Bradbury looked amazing this year, coming over as a probably overpriced free agent, I think most people thought. Looked incredible, like a top five cornerback in the league. Blake Martinez looked really good. We'd criticize him a lot coming into the season. And Leonard Williams, who went from 0.5 sacks in 2019 to getting the franchise tag, which was insane because, again, he got 0.5 sacks, and he had 11.5 sacks in 2020. Actually incredible.
They saw something that we didn't. I was a little less bullish. I gave them a B+, but still very solid offense, just 19th in DVOA. So I couldn't really put them that high. But overall, compared to like any they were supposed to be one of the worst defenses in the NFL, and rightly so. They didn't have anything, any reason to prove otherwise. And Xavier McKinney was injured coming into the season. He missed the first 12 weeks, by the way, played great in his last four.
He really looked good.
And James Bradbury, sure, he was not expected to be this good. Top five corner in the league, maybe. Top seven, definitely. And we saw people like Julius Peppers show up as new commanders Jabril. On the...
Oh. Julius Peppers. Julius Peppers is retired.
We saw people like Jabril Peppers step up as like a captain on that defense. He was the loudest guy on the field when he was there. Sure, maybe that was a bit of a problem sometimes, but he led that defense to new levels. And it was actually kind of fun to watch the Giants defense because they were on the field so much.
Yeah, if I got a regrade, I'd probably give them a B+ just because I forgot about pluses and minuses and I didn't really want to give them a B. I think that the reason I give them a B+ is because they still have so much room to improve. Next year, they could really be a sleeper for a top tier defense if they add a little bit of talent. So
and back with healthy rookies, it'll be a good sign.
Exactly. Keep an eye on that. Our next category, I guess, would be coaching. And this one was tricky. Tough. It was really tough, right?
Because they balance each other out.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking.
So I give them a C+, just because compared to expectations. Once again, I thought Garrett was atrocious. I don't know why he got re-signed. Joe Judge, compared to what I thought he was going to be, which was the bottom of the barrel, the worst coach in the league, wasn't terrible. Like, sure, he didn't turn around the team or do anything crazy, but he didn't ruin the team. So I had to give them a middle of the ground, a middle of the pack grade.
Yep, I give them a C2. Yeah, as you mentioned, they bounced each other out. And Joe Judge was really quiet, actually, after the preseason. Like, he made a lot of noise with, like, they won't have their names on their jerseys. They're going to run laps. And after that, I basically heard nothing from him for the rest of the year. Which,
probably
honestly,
a good thing.
Yeah, not a bad thing. Really not a bad thing. So, yeah, C seems right. I think this team is ending up pretty similar to there. What about
But that Garrett signing was just, it leaves you a little uneasy.
It does. That does concern me. And given how we know that defensive performance fluctuates from year to year, I guess it could fluctuate up, but it could also, a bunch of those guys could come back down to earth. And that is, you know, something to watch out for.
Yep. So Giants were actually one of the more interesting rookie teams coming into the season. So our next grade is the rookies. 9 out of the 10 rookie players that they drafted played this season, which was a higher rate than any other team in the NFL, which, I mean, I guess shows their depth, but also shows how bad their team was.
Yeah, they needed them.
But what did you think about their rookies? Because they had a very interesting group.
Yeah, I had trouble with this one, actually. I gave them a C overall for the rookies. And it was sort of weird because I thought Andrew Thomas actually did get a lot better over the course of the season, looking like a pretty serviceable tackle by the end of the year with room to improve. So I can't, like, the nail isn't in the coffin or anything. The book has not been written about his career. However, you have to mention, when you say that they took Andrew Thomas, that he pretty clearly looks like the worst of the top four tackles that were taken in that draft. I'm not going to say that he's going to end up worse than any of those other three. Obviously, Mekhi Becton, Jedrick Wills, and Tristan Wirfs. But it looks like they should have taken one of the other guys so far, even though he has been decent. So again, like a sort of C pick to me. And then, as you mentioned, Xavier McKinney was injured for most of the regular season, came back at the end. He flashed when he was on the field, but we haven't seen enough to really say. And then none of the other rookies really played enough for me to give them like a strong grade.
Yeah, I actually gave them a B minus because I kind of liked some of their later round rookies. I thought Darnay Holmes did well in his role. Mr. Irrelevant Tate Crowder actually improved tremendously throughout the season. He might even be a starter next year. And I just think that with how deep their draft was, I don't think it's entirely fair to base that all off Andrew Thomas. Obviously, top four pick, you want to hit that on the head. And he got better towards the end of the season. Over the final nine games, he only allowed four pressures in the game three times. And 39 of the 60 pressures he allowed came in the first seven games. So I just think that he improved at a slower rate than we thought. We thought he was the most NFL ready. He ended up being the least. But it was pretty impressive the way he got better. And I actually like the group.
The Andrew Thomas grade was honestly an opportunity cost grade, I think. And there's another player that's going to come up with later. I'm sure you'll be able to guess it when we come up to it. But it really was just they took him over these other guys. Was it worth it? Like, even if he turns out to be good. But that's fine.
Yeah, and also B minus C, they're basically the same.
Exactly. So we have two more categories. This one is by far the most subjective, I would argue. This one is vibes. What did you give them for vibes?
So as much as I really liked their defense, I hated their offense. I think there was no team that I'd rather watch. Like, there was no team that was less fun to watch than the Giants towards the end of the season, because the spread of touches between Alfred Morris and Devonta Freeman, while also like having to somehow get the ball to one of these B tier receivers at best, it hurt to watch. But I really like Jabril Peppers, and I think that he brings a lot to the football field. And James Bradbury locked everyone up. So I gave them a C+, just because I think that it was another balance each other out type moment.
Yeah, I gave them a C for vibes because they were really, really weird over the offseason and not necessarily good. Because Judge was doing like his whole like manly man, like dictator bullshit. I don't really know.
It was a good story.
It was a good story, right? It made for some good press conferences, but I do think it got better as the season went on, especially after they started like 0-5, I think. And then they gradually got better as their defense got better.
And they made a playoff push somehow.
Yeah. But then also the vibes at the end of the year got really, really funny.
My God.
Because did you see the tweets during the Eagles Washington game
when of course.
Darius Slayton, Golden Tate, they were all so mad at the Eagles were pulling Jalen Hurts. That just made me laugh. Mostly the vibes.
That was one of the most blatant, disrespectful. We talked about this enough, and maybe we'll bring it up again with the Eagles. But it was one of the most disrespectful things we've ever seen in football.
Yeah. So the last category might be the most important one for the offseason, and it's offseason outlook, which is also sort of hard to classify. But we'll give our grades and maybe some things that we're hoping to see from each of these teams. And so, starting with the Giants, Adam, what did you give them?
I give them a C, right in the middle of the pack. They're a little bit below the league average in cap, but they're $7 million above, so they're not in a terrible situation. Also, their biggest free agent is Leonard Williams, which obviously is a big deal. But when you have no one else that you're really worried about, like Kyler Fackrell, Deion Lewis, Wayne Gallman, there's no one that they need to really focus on. So I think this will be an important time for them to rebuild and to build up a stronger core. And I think that they have the ability to do so.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I give them a C2, actually. Currently, they only have $1 million in cap space, according to Over the Cap. I'm not sure. Like,
this was from a couple of days ago. So
so maybe like a projected cut, like of Golden Tate or someone like that, which makes sense. And I'm sure that they'll clear out more room. They really need to get a second cornerback because they took an early pick on DeAndre Baker, which clearly didn't pan out. I mean, he's already off the team 2 years later, I think. They need to rebuild the offensive line because outside of Andrew Thomas, you could reasonably replace every single person on that line. Maybe you keep Will Hernandez.
I think you have to, just because
for the short term, you definitely do. But like long term, he might not be a part of their plans. You need another starting wide receiver, I think, because Golden Tate is too old to be a part of this team's long term plans. And if you cut him, you can clear up, I think, $6 million in cap space. So it's probably worth it to just get someone cheap or draft someone and plan for the future a little bit more.
And they'll probably get rid of Austin Mack and CJ Board, who were surprisingly relied on this year, which they shouldn't have been in the first place. So it'll be an interesting new look.
Yeah. And then the final move that they'll make is I think that they'll probably re-sign Leonard Williams to a long-term extension, which
of course,
honestly, like one of the weirdest and dumbest trades I think we'd ever seen at the time where they traded like a third round pick for him and somehow it panned out. So props to Dave Gettleman. You still better nail this draft because if not, you're out of here anyways.
He's very up and down. He's very up and down.
Yeah. So now let's talk about the Eagles. And to do it, we are going to bring in a special guest. And now we're going to welcome in Sean Iredell to Tackling the NFL. Sean is Adams and my closest Eagles friend. So Sean is a huge Eagles fan and also a Carson Wentz defender, which seems especially timely tonight. So we brought him on to talk with us about, yes, obviously the Eagles and obviously Carson Wentz. And I think we're just going to get right into it, talking about the Eagles. And Sean, I told you about how we were doing a report card for everyone. So I think we're going to get your opinions as an Eagles fan on the 2020 Eagles and looking forward, I think, to the 2021 Eagles.
Well, first off, I just have to say, I can't believe you did Mr. Grill like that. And he's not your favorite, your closest Eagles fan.
Wait, he's an Eagles fan?
Yes.
Okay, you're off.
Big Philly sports fan.
We need to call him Mr. Grill.
We need to call him Mr. Grill. So do you just want to start with the offense?
Let's end with the offense so we have a good transition into what?
Okay. What do you want to start with then?
Let's start with their defense.
The defense? I like the defense. Yeah. I thought the defense played a really good year, and I thought that like continued from the 2018 and 2019 seasons, especially the last playoff game they played against Seattle, where it was single digits for most of the game, and they just played their hearts out the whole year. Especially Fletcher Cox, I think he's probably one of the most underrated defensive linemen in the game. I think overall they're too young, and Jalen Mills is taking too much responsibility, and he's not fully developed where he needs to be playing safety. But I think overall, there's a lot to work with on the defense. And I think especially our deep line is definitely going to be a good start for future seasons. I'm optimistic about our defense because I think they played really well, especially the start of the season against the Steelers and Ravens, against teams that were dropping like 30 plus points on decent teams at that point.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think that this is really like, they were great, but I think that is only salvageable part of the 2020 season, at least for the Eagles. I gave them a C, which is really exactly where they were. They were like right in the middle all year. They were 15th in DVOA. And it's sort of hard because there's not that much you can do when your offense isn't going to keep you in any game. So it's sort of hard for your defense to play that hard. But they still don't have any linebackers. Like Nathan Gary might be one of the worst coverage linebackers I've seen in my entire life. It's sort of comical. And they still haven't fixed their cornerback room. Darius Slay was an improvement against everyone except for DK Metcalf, where he got bullied. But that's fine. A lot of people do. And then they brought in Nickell Robey-Coleman to be the slot corner. Adam, you and I were both pretty bullish on that move because it was a really cheap pickup and he sucked, which is a real shame. And then Avonte Maddox was also terrible. He was actually the worst graded cornerback in the league by PFF. So some problems there in the secondary. Adam, what do you think?
Yeah, their linebackers were definitely a problem this year. They were playing Middleton by the end of the year, which was just a problem. I think
Middleton even or Eagles Singleton?
Singleton by the end of the year, which was just a problem. Either way, both irrelevant. He won't be on the team next year. But I thought Brandon Graham actually played pretty well throughout the season and was probably the highlight of that linebacker core, which overall was pretty weak.
Well, he's a pass rusher, though, isn't he?
I'd consider him a defensive lineman. They move him around.
Okay,
it's kind of hard to decide on the Eagles' defense because they have to move so many things around.
Yeah, he's listed as an interior linebacker, but I see what you mean. He played on the defensive line most of the year. And yeah, I think that was pretty much the only bright spot on that defense. I think that their secondary improved a little with Slay, but it's still lacking. And they don't really have the money to focus on it. So it'll be interesting to see how they grow next year and progress. But so far, not terrible and not the worst part of their team somehow.
Stat check. Brandon Graham played 750 snaps on the D-line and 8 snaps in the box. So,
okay,
defensive lineman. But yeah, let's get into the interesting stuff. Coaching, which was, to put it mildly, one of the most topsy-turvy roller coaster years for really anyone in 2020.
You can just say bad. He was bad.
It was bad. It was really, really bad. I gave it an F.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Doug Peterson lost a power struggle to Howie Roseman while also losing a power struggle to Carson Wentz, who was then immediately shipped out. Like, I didn't understand the power dynamics of the Eagles at all. I thought Jim Schwartz is fine. He's retired now, so it doesn't really matter. He's not coming back. And then Peterson was calling plays, so I just have nothing to say about his co-offensive coordinators.
Yeah, I mean, Doug Peterson, I haven't liked his play calling since he entered Philadelphia. I think his play calling was detrimental to the Eagles, even in their Super Bowl winning season, because his play calls are usually pretty simple. It's a bad screen pass on first down, a run up the middle that gets no yards for second down, and third and 10 for Carson Wentz to either run for it or try to do something crazy. I mean, it's been like that for all three seasons he's coached, and that's been really frustrating because he's like clearly not a play caller. It's not his strength. His strength is creating the plays and like engaging with the players, because a lot of the players really seem to like him until that Washington decision, which, I mean, I don't think there's an Eagles fan that will defend what he did in that situation.
Yeah, I don't think there's a football fan that would defend that situation. Mm-hmm. That was,
I would. They have the number 6 overall pick now. So, you know what? Yeah. Like, they weren't going to win anyways. Or they weren't
I feel bad because I think Nate Sudfeld should have gotten more snaps, especially because Jalen Hurts wasn't playing that well, because Nate Sudfeld is a decent third-string quarterback for as far as third-string quarterbacks go. The only thing I have to say about – other thing I have to say about the coaching is losing Deuce Staley to the Lions is absolutely huge. He was my pick for head coach. I think he was the best coach on the team. Maybe our I know our defense or offensive line coach also was pretty good. I think losing him was just brutal, and I think that's going to hurt Philly for the next, I think until we get a new running back after Sanders, I don't think Sanders will be able to get back to his form without Deuce Staley.
You're not a big fan of Nick Sirianni?
Sirianni, I mean, I haven't seen a lot from him. He's a quarterback's coach, so that's like unproven. I mean, Doug Peterson was really unproven when he came in too, so I'll have to wait and see. We'll probably hate him after the first week. That's how Philly fans are. He'll get booed out of the stadium.
I remember the first headline I saw with Nick Sirianni was Eagles Nick Sirianni fails to make good first impression. Mm-hmm. I'm just ready to see that fail.
Well, if you remember back to the Phillies season, Gabe Kapler's very first game as manager, he pulls Aaron Nola in the 7th inning with a one-hit shutout and gets booed out of the stadium. His very first game as manager. And so that's just the Philly crowd. They don't even give you more than one game to prove yourself. So we'll see if the Eagles win game one, if we get an easy team. We need a bottom 30% team for us to be able to win.
Good chance in the NFC East.
Yeah, good chance in the NFC East if we play a division game week one, but you never know.
I got to say, I think I was a little bit higher on Doug Peterson's play calling than most. Partially just because he was working with really limited quarterbacks, both Carson Wentz, who couldn't throw an accurate pass in 2020, and Jalen Hurts, who I think was better than Carson Wentz for what he was trying to do, but couldn't throw over the middle of the field, which really limits your offense. So while I don't think he was great, I really do think he showed a failure to innovate and to work new concepts in, like a lot of Eagles fans were upset about. I do think that he probably got an unfair portion of the blame. Also, it's sort of hard when you're not talking to your quarterback, which is sort of the next part. I'll skip ahead one. Let's just go to vibes really quickly, because this was really, really bad for the Eagles. Sean, this is just sort of in general the feeling in the locker room, and I had to give them an F for this because Adam Schefter reported this past week that Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson didn't speak. They only texted each other after he got benched. I mean, I don't know. What do you have to say?
Yeah, the vibe in Philly, it's not good when the team's not good, because the city lets you know if you're not living up to what they think. I think when we're good, our vibe is the best in the NFL, and when we're bad, there's no redeemable qualities about the vibe on our team. I think you saw that this year, that there was a lot of infighting, and without Jason Kelce, I honestly think the team would have fallen apart, because Jason Kelce was the only thing keeping us together, playing with one arm, probably concussed the whole season. And without him, we would have just been done.
Yeah, he was the only person sticking around on that offensive line or healthy. Adam, what do you think about the Eagles rookies this year?
They weren't great. I don't think Eagles fans were expecting Jalen Hurts to be the main guy that they got out of the draft this year. And the fact that he had to step up into that role was important, because clearly Wentz wasn't cutting it. But Jalen Reagor was invisible when he played. So was John Hightower. Davion Taylor, their third round pick, ended up being a special teams player.
He played 32 snaps all season. To be fair to Davion Taylor, he was a developmental prospect of when he was drafted. But yeah, they wanted more out of him.
And also, he was a pretty good special teams player. He had 177 special team snaps.
Yeah. But also, the thing is that we talked about how god-awful their linebacker room was. And if he couldn't break the starting rotation with that competition, it's a bad sign.
The one bright spot in this draft class for them, in my opinion, was Kevon Wallace, their fourth round safety. He played great towards the end of the season, 21 tackles, a fumble recovery, and he's watch out for him. He'll be a future stud in Philly, especially because they don't have much money to keep their vets.
I mean, our rookies, we drafted a punt returner, a quarterback worse than Wentz, and wide receivers that can't catch the ball. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. That was Howie Roseman's had so many bad draft classes. I think that might be the worst. That might have been the worst we've ever had. Yeah, that's what I'm going to – I mean, that's all there was to it. Jalen Reagor's only good plays. He started to come alive towards the end of the season. He had more catches. But that punt return touchdown was the most notable thing he did all season, which is kind of saying something.
For sure. I gave the rookie class a D. And I've talked about this before. It's sort of the opportunity cost. They picked Jalen Reagor one spot ahead of Justin Jefferson, which means that they had the choice between the two of them, and they chose Jalen Reagor straight up over Justin Jefferson. It was that simple.
But when you look at the Eagles' offensive production this year, you never know. Who knows what Justin Jefferson would have done on this Eagles offense? Would it have been that much better?
I mean, it's pretty tough. That's the thing that I mean, a lot of people got on Doug Peterson. We drafted Jalen Reagor to fit our scheme, and then we didn't even use him throughout the season for that role, which was really frustrating for a lot of fans because we really wanted to see him play. And it's kind of the same thing Nelson Agholor got, because Nelson Agholor was drafted to be that deep wide receiver threat, does nothing for 4 years with the Eagles, goes to the Raiders, and is one of their best looks. And that's something that's been really disappointing. Same thing with Mac Hollins and Miami, two great like deep threats that we didn't even use at all.
Yeah, Jalen Reagor just needs to get the ball in space, and they completely failed to do that on just like shallow cross or just anything that's an easy way, like an easy screen, a jet sweep, all that type of stuff should be working in 2 to 3 times a game because that's what he's good at. And since he can't really catch and he can't really run routes yet, they need to find a way to get the ball in his hands.
And then they also drafted John Hightower and Quez Watkins, who just disappeared.
Did nothing. Yeah, no impact.
I honestly didn't know we drafted Quez Watkins until he came up in like week 13. I had never
heard of him. Yeah, that one 30-yard touchdown and then disappeared again.
Yeah.
So before we talk about the offseason outlook, because I think that does lean into Wentz even a little bit closer, let's do the offense now. I mean, it's not a good look. I guess, Adam, you start us off and then Sean.
I mean, I gave them a D minus. They had the 28th best offensive DVOA. Wentz was atrocious the entire year. The play calling was bad. Their wide receivers were inept. Their running backs were the only kind of decent thing. And that's just because Miles Sanders is kind of talented. But it really was just, it was a mess. That's all you can describe it as.
Yeah, I mean, I can agree with that. I think what really hurts Eagles fans was that we were in all of the games. The first half of the season, we were in every single game, and we were one offensive play away from winning those games against the Steelers, against the Ravens. We were against the Rams. We were in all of those games, and our offense let us down every single time. I mean, if I had to give it a letter grade, I think I'd have to agree with Adam, maybe a D or a D+. I think our offensive line, seeing Jason Peters just collapse, he needs to retire. Yeah. He was a Pro Bowl left tackle 2 years ago. He can't block anymore. He needs to retire. Jason Kelce is our only offensive lineman we have left from our core 2017 run. And he's starting to look old. He's still the only one I think is starter quality. At quarterback, I think Jalen Hurts showed a lot of potential. And that's going to really, he's really going to need another year because the first rookie season is just so hard to tell. I think Wentz was bad all year, and I think what disappointed Philly fans more than his miscues with the ball was just his like decision at reading defenses and his poor like decision making. I think that hurt people a lot more than his talent, because we can understand he's coming back from injuries. He's had this long career, and he got a quarterback drafted behind him. Like, he's got plenty of pressure to play. He's got this big contract, so if he's going to make mistakes, that's fine. But physical mistakes. But mental mistakes were just off the charts. He threw so many interceptions that didn't need to be thrown. That's really what hurt us. And then running backs, Miles Sanders needs to stay on the field. He needs to play the full season. That's not a big ask. He wasn't getting an insane number of touches like every game, because I don't, even though he's our only running back, our only good player on offense, we still weren't running to him. He needs to play the full season. And then our wide receivers were terrible, and I don't think we're ever going to be able to get past that. I think that's going to hold us back for the next 2 years.
I agree with pretty much all of that. I gave them a D too, but I just want to add that Travis Fulgham just showed up, looked like the best receiver on a team for a month, and then just they stopped throwing to him. Like, what the hell happened there? I have no idea. A couple of other notes, like their offensive line was just perpetually hurt. I actually think it could be decent next year if Jason Kelsey's healthy, if Lane Johnson's healthy, and if Andre Dillard is healthy. Then you have a foundation at the very least. Then you just chip in around them. Carson Wentz, as you mentioned, all of those preventable interceptions, he literally tied for the league lead in interceptions in 12 games. While Jalen Hurts, I think, has proven that he's at least a good backup, but he has such like painfully obvious limits right now that it's sort of hard to expect him to carry a team, and that's what he's going to be asked to do next year unless they draft a quarterback. And then, yeah, Miles Sanders had a bad season, but you know, that sort of goes with offensive line injuries. And then one final note, I will never say anything bad about Greg Ward Jr. I love him.
Yeah, Greg Ward, I think, was probably, in my opinion, our best receiver throughout the whole season. He was the most consistent. He was the best red zone target other than Dallas Goedert when Dallas Goedert was healthy. I mean, Zach, oh, we also have to talk about tight end.
That's
Zach
true.
Ertz, incredibly disappointing season.
He's out the door this year.
I think he comes back because he had such a bad season, and he's going to play on a one-year deal, teach Dallas Goedert some Brent Celek, Zach Ertz. It's going to be Dallas Goedert, Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert. I think he's going to pass on some knowledge to Dallas Goedert, play a really good season, and go make some money. I think he's going to play one more year in Philly, though.
That would be interesting. Everything I've seen is projecting him to be traded, but we'll see. Let's talk about the offseason then, because this is what we're moving into. Sean, what do you want to see the Eagles do this offseason?
Well, what I really want is for them to have a good draft, but I think that's kind of impossible with Howie Roseman drafting the players. I want to see us draft Jamar Chase or Devontae Smith. If we don't get one of those two, I'll consider the draft a failure, because it's so hard to pick wide receivers after the elite top two. After that, it just falls off, and it's like finding a diamond in the rough. And our scouts are just not that good right now. I think the most important changes are not actually to the team. I think they're going to be to the coaching staff, and I think they're going to be to like the structure of the organization. Like Howie Roseman needs to be fired. We need to have better people in the front office to be scouting. And I think our coaching staff needs more toughness, because I think Jim Schwartz was a good coach, but I don't think he embodied the Philly vibe in the same way that kind of Andy Reid did for all those years.
Yeah, so we'll start with the draft then, because I think the main question that really came into full focus after they traded Carson Wentz and it became clear that it's either Jalen Hurts or you find another option, because Wentz isn't getting another chance in Philly, is do you draft a quarterback at number six? Because they have picks that they got from the Wentz deal that they can use to trade up. The Dolphins might want to move back, which would let the Eagles get either Justin Fields or Zach Wilson. There's options there. I've got some pros, I've got some cons. I guess I'll read them off first, and then you guys can discuss. But pros, like, they get an extra year to develop their quarterback. You can't guarantee that the Eagles pick will be as good next year, even though they seem to be on a downward trajectory. And maybe they really like Justin Fields or Zach Wilson. If Fields is there at number three, I would highly recommend moving up. However, the quarterback would be in a terrible situation, no matter who they draft. And that might stunt their growth. Also, you lose a year of team control on a lost season. So that's just a year off their contract. And they could possibly have a better pick next year and better options. I don't know. What do you guys think? I guess, Adam, you start. How do you feel about this?
I think it depends. Because you're drafting after the Jaguars, the Jets, and the Falcons, who are likely going to go quarterback. If not, we could totally see the Jets straying away from that because they kind of need everything. But if the top three guys are gone and one of those three were on the Eagles big board, or like that's, they got to choose someone and they got to stick to them. If they don't love one of the quarterbacks, just draft Chase or Smith. But if they need another quarterback right now, because right now Jalen Hurts is the only one on the roster and Greg Ward is the backup. if they draft a quarterback this year, I think that the Eagles have a shot at like having potential. Because right now, if they draft another wide receiver, we're going to see the same Eagles. We're not going to, a wide receiver isn't going to change the Eagles. I think that a quarterback is a necessary route for them to take, whether it means trading up or getting their main guy. They just got to choose someone and stick to them.
I'm going to kind of disagree. I think I agree that we need to build the offense around the quarterback. And I know we need another quarterback because I don't think Jalen Hurts has it in him to start the season. I think we need a veteran quarterback. We need to either sign someone or trade it for someone, a Nick Foles, a Chad Henne, an Alex Smith type, one of those guys. Yeah. Josh McCown. Well, Josh McCown might be it. I mean, we need someone to start the first three games, show Hurts how to play, and then, because that's really what happened with Wentz for the first, I think it was the first four or five games of the season Nick Foles was playing until Nick Foles got injured. We really need a leadership type of quarterback to show Hurts in the locker room what to do, because he's not ready to start the Philadelphia Eagles, and we need another quarterback. I don't think drafting a quarterback is the answer, because we would immediately have to start him or Hurts, and that just limits our options so much. I think a veteran is definitely the way to go.
Here's why I disagree, though, and this is going to tie into the rest of their offseason plans. This team is completely screwed in 2021, pretty much no matter what. As soon as they traded Carson Wentz, they sort of accepted that because they incurred a $34 million dead cap hit by trading him. They're at least $40 million over the cap right now, and possibly more depending on what the cap is. And they really have no young talent left. Like, all of their best players are in their 30s. So what you can see is that they might need to move on from some of their best players and like the core of that Super Bowl team that's still around. So you've got guys like Fletcher Cox, Brandon Brooks, Brandon Graham, maybe Lane Johnson, Jason Kelce, like all these guys. I don't know if all of them will go, but we could see some of them moving. And that means that if you bring in a veteran quarterback, you're not moving forward into the next phase of your team's future. Now, it's possible that you just completely sacrifice next year and you say, we don't even want to try to start a future next year. We want to just wait until we can draft someone in 2022 and start then. And that's entirely possible. But I do think that benching Jalen Hurts doesn't help you. You need to see what you have in him. And he's already started a bunch of games. It's too late to put him back on the bench for someone like Nick Foles. That you know exactly what you have in Nick Foles, and you know he's not your future, and you know you're not going to win next year. That doesn't really change anything for you. I don't know. That's where I'm leading right now.
Yeah. I can definitely agree with that. I think we need maybe we definitely do start Jalen Hurts. I think I can probably change. I can probably agree with that. He's probably started too many games at this point to bring someone else in. But I think our backup quarterback should be a veteran to show Hurts what to do in the locker room and to show him how to read the defense, because that's things that he needs improvement on. And I don't think we should build the team around the veteran quarterback. I think Hurts is the person we're building the team around. I just think he doesn't have enough experience right now to be the de facto leader of that locker room.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how close the Eagles are to the complete eject button, dumping Cox, dumping even like Miles Sanders, just for capital, for picks, like completely rebuilding. Because right now, if the Eagles try and go down the path of winning as many games as they can next year, it's not going to be good for their future. They're going to end up with another mediocre pick. I think that maybe we're getting close to that point of no return where you got to get let everyone go.
You know who they'll be if they try to compete next year? It's actually going to be slightly worse than this team's outcome, but I'm going to use this as a segue into the Wentz trade. But very quickly, they would be the Chicago Bears. They would be trapped in a team that's going nowhere. I mean, they've been worse than mediocre the way the Bears have been, so it's actually worse than that. But they would be sticking with like a bunch of veterans that clearly aren't going to win the Super Bowl. So from there, let's talk about Carson Wentz, who mercifully for I think pretty much everyone didn't go to the Bears and instead ended up with the Colts this past week. And I wanted to start with the winners of the trade, because I think that there's actually quite a few of them. So let's see, Adam, how about you start us off with who you think won this trade?
Well, I think first of all, the Eagles won the trade. Just getting rid of Carson Wentz was key to them moving on. And just even having him on the roster was like assist. They needed to get him out of there. He was impeding the team's progress, and there's nothing left in him clearly. And I think that was a genius move that should not have taken that much thinking.
I think I'm going to have to go if I have to pick someone who won the trade. I don't think either team really won the trade. I think the Eagles got absolutely nothing in return, and the Colts got a bigger problem than anything they could ever want. I think Carson Wentz really won the trade because he got out of Philly. He got Doug Peterson fired. Those were his main two objectives. I'm surprised he did both of them. That's impressive to me.
It really
and
is.
He got onto a team that has a decent offensive line that he's going to be able to play behind. The run game is going to hurt him because the run game in Indianapolis isn't. I don't think it's as good as the Eagles' run game with Jonathan Taylor. I would take Miles Sanders over Jonathan Taylor.
I think that the running back duo in Indianapolis is one of the best in the league.
Adam loves Nyheim Hines.
I don't think Nyheim Hines is anywhere close to Miles Sanders, and I think that's going to hurt Wentz because Wentz is going to be throwing a lot more. But I think he would definitely rather be in Indianapolis than Philly because, I mean, I don't want to say he's soft because that's kind of like a cliche that's gone around the media, but I don't think he's Philly tough is the way I would put it.
Yeah, so Carson Wentz, I definitely think he's the winner of the trade because my secondary winner of the trade is actually the Bears because it lets the Bears do like a proper tank and move into their future and draft a quarterback rather than trying to do whatever this like Frankenstein's atrocity would have been if they traded for Wentz. In which case, Wentz would have been completely screwed because he would have had even less talent around him than he did with the Eagles, and the Bears would have been screwed because they would have been paying up a bunch and trading away a bunch of first-round draft picks to just basically tank for another year. And then honestly, I don't hate this trade for the Colts. I think it's fine because they got Carson Wentz, who was 2 years ago, 3 years ago maybe now, I can't keep track of time, an MVP candidate, and it really didn't cost them all that much. So if he doesn't work out, they can move on relatively easily within 1 or 2 years. So I think that like it worked out pretty well for every side. It's just a pretty low upside trade for pretty much every single team involved.
I definitely agree with that.
Oh, yeah. Josh, ahead, I wanted to get your opinion on this one thing that's going around. This Frank Reich, Carson Wentz connection that people love to talk about. They're reunited. Do you think that will have any impact on Wentz's performance?
God, I love this segue. Thank you, Adam. I have so much written on this. So this is a really, really hard question to answer, I think. It's actually really ironic that the Eagles just hired Nick Sirianni, who is the Colts offensive coordinator, and who was essentially supposed to be Frank Reich 2.0 for them to fix Carson Wentz. It looked like he was going to stay when they hired Sirianni, and then they just shipped him to Sirianni's former team. This is really hard to figure out because we don't know what Carson Wentz is. We know he's not 2017 Wentz. He's probably not 2020 Wentz. Like, I hope to God he's not for everyone's sake. He's probably closer to 2018, 2019 Wentz. And what is 2018, 2019 Wentz? I looked into the stats a little bit. He was right in the middle of the league. Like, he was right around the middle of the league pretty much in both those years. He was 18th in EPA per play, and he was right around the median for total points earned, which is Sports Info Solutions' proprietary stat that measures all-around contributions. And I only mentioned that because I found this hilarious that he had 73 in 2019, 72 points in 2018, and he had negative 20 in 2020. I just thought that was really funny. But the problem is that the fit is sort of weird in Indy because I love this stat. According to Benjamin Solak, who writes for Bleeding Green Nation, Carson Wentz threw eight shallow crossers in 2020. And in three seasons, the Colts passers were among the league's top quarterbacks in gross targets on shallow routes. Andrew Luck had 53 in 2018, which was second in the league. Jacoby Brissett was fourth in the league in 2019, and Philip Rivers was second last year, right? They throw a ton of those routes, and Carson Wentz was a disaster on them this past year. So can Frank Reich fix him? I don't know. But the scheme that the Colts have been running these past couple of years, doing all of the things that Carson Wentz completely failed to do and had the most trouble with this past season. Sorry, that was a really long-winded answer and a really long-winded way of me saying, I don't know, but I have concerns.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And also, Nyheim Hines is no. Wait, sorry, I didn't.
Miles Sanders, you meant to say that.
I meant to say, Carson Wentz is no Philip Rivers. This is a completely new look to this Indianapolis offense, which I think is important because it kind of felt like they were getting a little boring towards the end of the year. Not to say take anything away from the Indianapolis wide receivers. I love Pittman. Hilton's getting a little old, but still has some moves. They got one of the best receiving backs in the NFL. And I think that maybe this new situation with Wentz at quarterback could provide a new look and maybe a spark in this offense, which really is the only hole on that Colts team, which is so good all around. And I don't know, maybe it's a good situation.
Here's my question. Does this make Indianapolis a Super Bowl contender? Because it really needs to be. Like, they gave up a decent amount, and if not, then they probably need to find a new quarterback for the future because they've got a pretty solid team. And my answer is no, really. I think he's probably going to be worse than Phillip Rivers was this past year, and that's not really saying anything that bad about Carson Wentz. It's just saying that Phillip Rivers was quietly pretty good, and for Carson Wentz to be better than that, he's going to need to play much, much closer to his 2017 level than he has at any point in the recent past. So I just think that it's sort of a net neutral move because Phillip Rivers was obviously retiring. And I think I probably would have preferred for Indy to just find a higher upside option in the draft. And I don't think Carson Wentz is that. I don't know, Sean.
Like who?
I don't know. Gone? And that's really hard because they're drafting late in the draft. Sean, if you were Indianapolis, like how do you feel about Carson Wentz's chances to rebound?
I mean, it's really tough because Carson Wentz is such a low floor, high ceiling type of player, and you never know what those in the NFL. And especially with the amount of beating he's taken with all of the sacks, that's what I would be concerned about because I really wouldn't want an Andrew Luck 2.0 situation where the guy is just getting hit so much. And that's really how Philly felt through the start of the season, that it really wasn't Carson Wentz's fault the first 4 weeks. He was just getting beat up and beat up and beat up. And I'd be concerned about his health based on how many hits he's taken. I'm concerned about his mechanics. Honestly, I don't know how well he's been throwing. But if they feel that they have a chance to fix Carson Wentz and bring him back, and I think he's under a much better offense than he ever had in Philly. Even in our 2017 year, I think the Indianapolis Colts play calling will be a lot better than Doug Peterson's. And I think that could really bring him. I think he honestly has a chance to be better than his 2017 season. I think he could be.
That's a bold take.
That is a bold take. I think he has the options there. I think the tight end is going to hurt him a little bit. I think the Eagles tight ends are better in 2017. But overall, I think he has a chance to be better than his 2017 season. And I don't think he'll be worse than his 2020 season.
That's hard to do.
I don't think that's really possible. He had one of the worst quarterback performances of all time last year.
So I want to close this out with just one of the most interesting scenarios and one of the most fascinating things for anyone to keep an eye on in 2021, which is that the second round pick that the Colts agreed to send to the Eagles in this trade conditionally becomes a first round pick if Carson Wentz plays more than 75% of the snaps, which is essentially more than 12 games of the season. So at that 12 game mark, the Colts are going to have to make a very, very interesting decision as to whether they think that it's worth continuing to stay in the playoff hunt. Or if they're in it, or if they're leading, or if they're just out of it, and if they decide to keep contending, or if they just want to pull the plug and save their first round pick. And that would be fascinating.
The other condition is that if Wentz plays at least 70% of snaps, but they make the playoffs. So if they want to do that, then they can pull him early and then not worry about it. But the Colts team is so good that it's almost hard to believe that they're not going to be a playoff contender because they basically relied on their defense anyways this year.
If they're like 5-7, I'm going to say at like, I don't know if that's 12 games. If they're 5-7 at the 12 game mark, I mean, it would be hilarious if they decided, no, we're done. And they tell everyone on their team, you guys can pretty much pack it in for the year because we don't care about the season. And I don't really know if you can do that. I think at this pick, Sean, I think that you should probably be pretty happy because I would be shocked if an NFL team actively says to everyone, we're done competing. It would be the most blatant move I think anyone's ever done of tanking. They'll probably make a bit of injury, but even so, everyone will know. So I don't know. It's something to keep an eye on.
I don't see a way Indianapolis doesn't win the AFC South. The AFC South is terrible. The Tennessee Titans are the only team that's going to give them competition. And I think the Colts just have more players than the Tennessee Titans. Like overall, I mean, that's just going to be a battle between those two teams. But if you're like talking about the Colts making the playoffs, they really don't have a tough road to making the playoffs. It's kind of like the NFC East of the AFC. They really don't have to beat a lot of teams or win a lot of key games against good division opponents. They should definitely be the front runner in that division. And I think that factors in when you talk about Wentz. I think they know they're going to have to give up a first round pick. They just wanted that kind of fallback option if Wentz gets injured. I think that's more why it was in there, because I think injury history is the biggest thing that's going to be the worry for the Indianapolis Colts.
Absolutely. Well, Sean, we took up a bunch of your time, so I'm going to let you go, but we really appreciate you coming on and talking with us. This was really fun, and hopefully you'll come on some other time to talk more about the Eagles.
I would love to, you guys. You guys are great. I will listen to the podcast. Follow me on Instagram, at Sean Iredell. Love you guys.
All right. See you, Sean. And next, we are going to talk about the
Washington football team.
Thank you, Adam. All right. Thanks again to Sean. And the next team we're going to talk about is the Washington football team. So we're staying close to home on this one. And we obviously are going to start with the offense, which was not where you want to start with the Washington football team. But Adam,
yeah,
give me your offensive grade.
So how are we doing this? What's the worst grade you can get, an E or an F? What are we deciding?
I'm actually not sure because I didn't really give any E's, but I did give them an F for this.
Okay, then I'll give them an F. Whatever the lowest thing is, I'll give them that.
Yeah, absolutely.
They had the worst offensive DVOA, despite going 7-9. They didn't have any like productiveness at all from anywhere except for Logan Thomas and a little bit from Antonio Gibson and Taylor Heinicke in the playoffs. If you're waiting for a Taylor Heinicke to show up in the playoffs for your offense to get moving, you've got serious problems.
Yeah. They had by far the worst pass offense in the league. One good thing, actually, like quietly good thing, I'd say, was that the offensive line was better than expected.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Coming into the season, we were really concerned about how they were going to hold up for Dwayne Haskins. As it turns out, he didn't stick around long. But Cornelius Lucas played surprisingly well at left tackle, filling in for, actually, I guess replacing Trent Williams, but he's not a long-term replacement, I don't think. But you get an F when you cut your first-round quarterback in the middle of a second season. Like that, if that doesn't get you an F, I don't know what does. There's not much more to say.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But Brandon Scherff did show that he can be a leader on that line and he can bring them together. And that was actually a very good pick, despite me hating it at the time.
Yeah, we will talk about him later because he's going to play a pretty big role and a pretty big decision that they'll need to make in their offseason plans. But this is obviously the best part of their team. Their defense, I gave them an A. I'd be a little surprised if you didn't.
Yeah, I give them an A. I would have given them an A+ if I had thought about that. But yes,
I didn't do pluses. They came third in defensive DVOA, second against the pass, 11th against the rush. They had, at the very least, a top three defensive line. I didn't really know where to put them in relation to the Steelers or to the Bucks, which actually shows you, I was thinking about this, how absolutely insane the Bucks offensive line was, because they got no pressure. They were absolutely stonewalled in that divisional game. So yeah, truly incredible. And they also got surprisingly good play from several players who they picked up for cheap or drafted late. Two guys that come to mind are Ronald Darby and Cameron Curl in the secondary. Like, those guys were both surprisingly good. They have obviously 5 first round picks on the defensive line, but it wouldn't have worked if their secondary hadn't stepped up and played better than expected coming into the season.
Yeah, Kendall Fuller had his career year this year. He stepped up against some insanely good number one wide receivers. And just like, sure, you can have a really good defensive line and that gives the quarterback no time at all to know what he's doing. And their secondary was easily a top 10 secondary in the league. So I thought that just all the, it was probably a lot of that is due to the pressure of the defensive line. But altogether, this defense was next to perfect.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's that age-old debate, like, build on the line or build in the secondary. And, I mean, this really goes to show how they're intertwined. I think that the defensive line wouldn't have been as successful if the secondary hadn't stepped up and at least played at minimum, a league average level. Like, it just wouldn't have mattered at all. And the secondary really benefited from not having to cover quite as long. Because, yeah, they don't have that many superstars on the back level.
Yeah, and they just were showed dominance all year. And the fact that they're all, like, 22 years old is ridiculous. Because we will continue to see this Washington football team defensive line for at least another 5 years.
Here's the thing. You say that, but defenses do not last long. Like, that Jacksonville defense was assembled and was supposed to be a superpower for years, and 2 years later it had been disassembled. Like, same with the Chicago Bears defense. That was so good the first year that Khalil Mack came.
It's just the age. They are all so young.
And yet, next year or maybe this offseason, Jonathan Allen will need to be extended. And the next year, Daron Payne will probably need to be extended. Like, these extensions are coming up, and then they'll need to pick and choose who they're going to pay. That's why it's so hard to build through a defense for a long-term sustainable plan, which is why they desperately need to find a quarterback. And we'll talk about that when we get to the offseason outlook.
Yeah. But for now, they're a lot of fun to watch.
Oh, 1,000%. The next category is coaching. And I gave them a B because I
gave them a B minus. Yeah.
I think that Ron Rivera has been exactly what they needed. He hasn't been all that special, but he's been really steady. And we know exactly how dysfunctional the Washington football team can be. So having Ron Rivera and having everything sort of not leaking all at once, like not trying to plug a million holes in the boat at the same time, is really valuable to this team. And so that's why I gave him a B.
Yeah, but the thing that brought me down was Scott Turner's performance, because, like, sure, you can like your tight end, but we don't just want to see the tight end get the ball. As much as Logan Thomas was pretty impressive this year and obviously underutilized in his jobs at Chicago and Detroit. Is that where he was before?
I have no idea.
Either, it doesn't even matter. What's important is that offense was coached horribly, and maybe with a little bit of help from some, like, decent quarterback, they'll be able to turn that around. But for now, poor job by Scott Turner.
Yeah, I just realized that I was halfway through my notes, I think, and then I stepped away because I have just written on one line Scott, and I was trying to figure out what Scott meant. And so it was apparently about Scott Turner. I don't even remember what my thought was. I have to say, it's a little bit hard to build a passing attack when you don't have a quarterback. So I'll give him a pass for this year, but, like, he's really got to step up next year, assuming they can find a quarterback again.
And Jack Del Rio did what they needed him to. So compared to Scott Turner, I don't know if he's, like, that much better than he is bad. But so I give them a B minus, which is a little bit better than a C, but not that much.
Sure. Jack Del Rio is a terrible person, but he's a pretty good defensive coordinator.
Yep. And that's just a lot of football people. Yep.
All right. So the rookie class was special. Adam, what grade did you give their rookies?
I give them an A. I thought that Antonio Gibson was one of the most special running backs this year.
I know how much you love him.
Anyone who could have possibly seen this coming out of his college highlights is just a football fanatic and genius.
For the record, he did get hurt, which I said was also likely because he's never taken that many touches.
Sure. But he definitely outperformed expectations.
Sure. Yep.
And then there's this other guy named Chase Young who was kind of decent.
So here's the thing. I actually gave the rookie class a B, maybe a B plus if I was doing it with pluses or minuses. And here's why. First of all, Chase Young is unbelievable. Antonio Gibson has contributed, like, a lot earlier than expected is sort of the best way to put it. The turf toe injury that he suffered after his breakout game on Thanksgiving against the Cowboys really slowed him down for the rest of the season. So that's why his stats probably weren't quite as impressive. I mentioned Cameron Curl, who's a safety, and he's been really, really surprisingly good for a 7th-round pick. Both their 4th-round rookies were injured, but still getting 3 quality starters, and one of them is likely a superstar out of a draft class, is very good. The reason I gave them a B is because, again, I guess it's opportunity cost. As good as Chase Young is, it's becoming increasingly clear that they really should have gone for a quarterback at number 2, be it Herbert, be it Tua, be it finding a way to trade up to number 1 and get Joe Burrow. They desperately need a quarterback, and their draft pick is late this year. Like, there isn't a clear path for them to get one now. I just think that, like, as amazing as Chase Young is, and most Washington fans probably wouldn't agree with this because, you know, they love Chase Young so much, I think that when you have that high of a pick, you have to spend it on a quarterback if you're not that sure about your quarterback position, which clearly Ron Rivera was not a big fan of Dwayne Haskins even coming into the year.
Yeah, I didn't look at this as much as an opportunity cost thing. I just looked at the rookies that they drafted and how well they did, and Chase Young was ridiculous. So just automatic A for me.
Sure. What about vibes? The vibes in this one were a little bit strange, but I got some.
So I didn't know how to take vibes here because obviously
I was saying, like, locker room, like, feeling.
Oh, okay. Because obviously the worst front office in the NFL, worst front office that has been exposed in the NFL.
True.
Just horrible atmosphere. no one can possibly be a good-hearted Washington football team fan knowing who's leading them and who's running them.
But sell the team, Dan.
But as I say that, it was so much fun to watch that defensive line work. And Chase Young, his little scenes where he's pointing to Taylor Heinicke's name, his mom, that relationship that they always pan to no matter what type of game it is. It could be the middle of a blowout and they'll just be like, oh, by the way, Chase's mom is happy. I just thought that was so much fun to watch. So they balance each other out. I gave it a B just to stay political and not get too, not to be too dangerous.
Yeah, no, I left the front office out of this mostly just because it's not Chase Young's fault that, like, Dan Snyder is a massive piece of shit. So he can't really help that. I gave them a B too. And I thought that, yeah, it was like a big part. Chase Young, who was awesome, he was really like an energizer bunny, sort of the hype man in the same way that Mark Ingram is for the Ravens or was for the Ravens. And Ron Rivera, just really, you know, the steadying influence.
Oh, yeah. And also like the whole story where he came back from cancer.
All of that. Yeah.
Very motivation.
Exactly. Yeah. But here's what matters for the Washington football team more than really any team in this division, although Cowboys too, I think, the offseason outlook. Adam, walk me through what your plan would be to fix the Washington football team this offseason.
So one thing that Washington has is they got a lot of money. And that's about it. So they can get rid of Ryan Kerrigan this year. Obviously, he's been a huge part of that defense since he joined the league, but they don't need him anymore because of how deep they are. And that frees up another $11 million. They're already six in the cap with $41 million. What they need to do is target that quarterback.
And also, sorry, just you can cut Alex Smith, which I hope he never plays football again. As much as good of a guy as he is, it's terrifying to me to watch him play. And if you cut him after June 1st, they'll clear up, I believe, $19 million on this year's cap. They'll be like well over $60 million in cap space with those two moves.
And with that $60 million, quarterback has got to be number one target, right?
Absolutely.
Where do you think they go with this?
All right. I've got a lot of options. I'm going to run through them with you. You can tell me which one you like. If you've got any others I haven't thought of, absolutely tell me. So they signed Taylor Heinicke to a cheap contract over the offseason. Like, there's just a chance that he ends up starting. Maybe whoever they bring in gets hurt. Maybe they just can't find anyone better. They decide to roll the dice. Their draft pick is probably too low to get any of the big four. Unless they decide to trade up a lot. I don't really know what that would look like. I have some ideas, actually, but unless they really like Mac Jones, which I don't personally, I think he's just a really low ceiling floor or a really low ceiling player. And it's probably not worth it long term to do that.
A really low ceiling is a floor.
Yes. Well, high floor, low ceiling, I guess, player, which would probably help them in the short term, but I don't think it's probably a great long term fit.
Yeah.
And so it's probably better to look to get a trade or in free agency. So the obvious, you know, everyone's looking at it is Deshaun Watson. I think that as much as the team has improved in this past year, I don't think Deshaun has come into Washington.
Don't put him in that front office.
Yeah, that's my point. Like, he knows perfectly well. I really think he understands better than maybe any player in the league just how important an owner is to their team's culture. And he's not getting anywhere near Dan Snyder. Unfortunately, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that's the direction they'll go. I'd be shocked if Deshaun Watson came to Washington.
Yeah. And for the record, I think that like they would love to make that kind of trade, like including Chase Young is almost a possibility in that kind of trade. I think that with his no trade clause, he would reject going to Washington. That is more my point.
I would not be able to imagine Deshaun Watson going there.
Nope. So another option is Sam Darnold.
That was more my speed. That's what I was kind of thinking.
Yeah. And I think a trade here is pretty realistic. I have one I want to run by you. Sam Darnold for Matt. Oh, God. His name isn't pronounced. It's not pronounced Ioannidis because I looked it up just before. I looked this up last night and I forgot how to pronounce it. I apologize, Matt. But anyways, Matt, I'm going to say Ioannidis. I'm sorry. I don't remember how to pronounce his name. He's very good. He actually was their best defensive lineman last season. He got injured like before the 2020 season. And so he didn't play at all.
Matt Ioannidis.
Great. Okay, so Matt Ioannidis.
I hate Greek people.
I hope no one listens to this is Greek, but
not too worried.
He's really an excellent defensive lineman, been really underrated, and they locked him up to a cheaper long-term contract coming into this season. He was hurt, but he should be back for next season. I feel like a trade like that would be mutually beneficial because there's just really no room for him on the Washington football team line. Like, they just don't need him at all. I could see him moving in all sorts of deals to fill in holes at other positions. And Sam Darnold, like, I don't know how much the Jets expect to get for him, but I feel like Ioannidis would be a pretty good replacement.
Yeah, sorry, that is so weird to hear. I agree. I think he's one of the most underrated defensive linemen just because he hasn't gotten like the role that he could get on any other defensive line. I think he could easily be a starter. It's just where he goes, that's the question. I don't think that they'd do that one-for-one deal. I think
there's probably a draft pick included there.
Yeah, a Washington football team third or fourth round pick added in there. Either way, I could totally see Sam Darnold coming to the Washington football team. And if I were them, I'd be pretty happy with that.
One other option, which I'm still higher on him than I think most people. I'm not sure about you. I don't know where you feel.
Cam Newton. McCown. Oh.
Not Josh McCown. I think he'd be more likely to come as a coach than as a player. But Cam Newton has obviously been on people's minds because of the Ron Rivera connection. And for the record, I still think Cam actually has a decent amount left in him. Like, he was put in a bottom three situation, at least offensively in the league. He just had no chance. I think that behind a better offensive line, you get him a couple of weapons. I think that he could actually be pretty good in a Scott Turner offense. I mean, he already has been before. He looked pretty good, I think, at the beginning of the 2018 season, I want to say. It's hard to remember years, but I think that's a possibility. I feel like fans wouldn't be too high on it because he didn't look great at the end of last year. But considering the mitigating circumstances, I still have more faith that Cam Newton can be at least like a mid-tier to upper-tier NFL quarterback.
Yeah, he's at the minimum, he's going to give you a system quarterback that's going to make the easier throws. And he's mobile too, so he can get out of the pocket and move around. But at the same time, do you want to go with someone who is a league veteran that has been through some stuff, or do you want to go with the upside and Sam Darnold, who we haven't really seen play?
Definitely a very fair question.
Yeah, there's pros and cons to both of them. If I'm them, I'm happy with either of them over Kyle Allen and Alex Smith and Taylor Heinicke. So I think that wherever they goes up, it's just how up is the question.
Yep, absolutely. And that's
and also
thing.
Terry McLaurin needs some help.
Yep. Beyond the quarterback, I think that they probably need a second linebacker to go with Cole Holcomb, because I'm not a fan of John Bostic. They need to
Thomas Davis is gone.
Yeah, and Thomas Davis is like almost 40. Like, he's on his last legs. They need to re-sign Ronald Darby, who was surprisingly good. That shouldn't be too expensive, I don't think. I think that they'll probably end up franchise tagging. I don't know if they'll end up extending him off of that, but Brandon Scherff, as you mentioned before, was more durable this past season than he has been in the past. He still only played 13 games. He hasn't played a full season in a long time, but I think that they'll probably franchise tag him as the centerpiece of that offensive line. And finally, two more things, actually. Look for a long-term left tackle. Orlando Brown Jr. is an interesting trade option, right up the beltway, actually. But he's on the trade block. And then finally, as you mentioned, get Terry McLaurin some help. Sign a wide receiver. That could be someone like Allen Robinson or maybe someone like Juju Smith-Schuster. But you've got a lot of options.
They have the money. Exactly. They have the money. And they don't really have too many other places to spend it. So
exactly. Like, all those other positions that I mentioned, except for maybe like left tackle, are all pretty cheap to fill. So they should be able to do
that. You're not gonna be out here buying a quarterback in today's league.
There's no one hitting the market that's worth paying a ton of money for.
Yep. Not even Dak Prescott.
Whoa. Oh,
I'm
my God.
Kidding.
You
I'm
put
kidding.
Dak Prescott on this team. Oh, they would be
serious problems for the rest of the league.
Yeah, they'd be cooking.
But also, I don't want to see the Washington football team succeed that much.
I 100% agree. Yep.
What's your overall grade for the Washington football team? I think we forgot to do it for the Jack.
We did forget to do it for the Giants. My offseason outlook grade for the Washington football team is a B. I don't know if I mentioned that, but my overall grade for Washington is also a B, mostly because everything is like A to B, and then the defense just drags it down to a B. Or sorry, offense. Offense, my bad.
Definitely not their defense.
Not the defense.
I had the offensive outlook as an A- just because they have so much money and they know what they need to do with it. But overall, I give them a B because their offense kind of drags it down.
Yeah. It's just so hard to find a quarterback in today's NFL. And when you need it right now because your team is ready to compete, it's going to be tough, which is why I left out a B. But yeah.
And the last team in this division should not take too long. They're very one-dimensional. What do you think about the Cowboys?
Okay, so for their offensive grade, I gave it just an incomplete. It's so hard to gauge what to give them for an offensive grade when their starting quarterback and like their star quarterback and nearly all of their offensive line was injured. Literally two all pros and someone else who should have been a Pro Bowler last year were all out for the majority of the season. They were ended up 24th in offensive DVOA. They played at the fastest pace in the league. Yeah, exactly. And my biggest question about the offense is, what do you think about Kellen Moore? Because I have no idea what to think. Because he received head coaching buzz almost immediately as soon as he took the offensive coordinator job and looked like halfway competent. So I think he has done some creative stuff, but he also could just be like a white former quarterback.
Yeah, I gave them a C just because it was in the middle, but I might as well have given them an I for incomplete. Impossible to grade their offense this year because it wasn't their offense. It was the ghost of their offense with a couple of the guys sprinkled in there like Zeke. So I gave them a C on offense, but sure, I could understand that. But Kellen Moore, on the other hand, there's no way we can know, right? There's no way we can gauge him with no one to work with. You don't have your starting quarterback. We have adjusted playbooks for Ben DiNucci, for Andy Dalton. We haven't seen what he can really do with a full, healthy offense. So I don't even want to really think about that right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Luckily, he didn't get like a head coaching offer, in which case we would have had to spend a lot of time talking about it.
And researching him, because we wouldn't know that much.
That's true. All I know is that he played at Boise State. The defense on the other end is not good. I gave them an E, and I don't know what separates an E and an F. Honestly, my grading system, it might as well be an F. It was just a disaster. What did you give them?
So I give them a D minus, simply because of the expectation thing.
I had a D and then I just changed it to an E. I feel like a D is proper.
I knew that they were going to be abysmal. I think everyone knew that they were going to be awful. And they showed it off the start. Like they had probably one of the worst defenses of all time up till like week 10. And then they kind of pulled a little bit together.
It did not matter at all.
I don't want to say anything to support this at all, but I'm just saying they moved up to 23rd defense in defensive DVOA. Which is kind of impressive. I don't want to say impressive, but just it exceeded my wildest imagination for this defense. And yeah, I don't feel right giving them that bad. I don't think they're as bad as the Washington football team's offense was bad.
I think that's probably fair. It was just clearly not going to be an easy season for the defense coming in. Their secondary was in tatters already. The problem was they were consistently suffering from coverage busts. My biggest concern is that probably the two centerpieces of this defense, beyond like DeMarcus Lawrence, are Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch, and they both had terrible seasons. I know you like Jalen Smith more than I do, but I don't think he was all that good this year. Again, he didn't have much help around him, but still.
Yeah, that's my problem. I don't think that anyone could possibly succeed in a defense this atrocious that you can just get thrown over your head whenever they want to, because your starting cornerback is Trayvon Diggs.
Yeah, actually, so I sort of liked what Trayvon Diggs did over the course of the season, but as bad of a hire as Jason Garrett was for the Giants, his former team might have done worse in hiring Mike Nolan, who was a disaster, to put it mildly. I mean,
yeah.
There's not too much to say, but basically he just ran a really complicated hybrid scheme and their players are young and they're not talented. So it did not go well.
No. Maybe you can try that with a good defense, but once you got to bring it back to the basics, run a couple simple coverage plays. He didn't do any of that. He tried to be fancy, tried to beat them in their own games. And you're not Bill Belichick. You can't make it work with anyone.
Not to mention that he didn't have an offseason to install this defense either.
Yeah, it was painful to watch. And just sitting there watching Mike McCarthy, it doesn't look like. It's just such a contrast from the Mike McCarthy we saw in the Green Bay Packers that it's hard to watch.
So let's talk about coaching then, because I gave them a D And I wasn't really sure what to do. It's so hard when their team is built around their offense and their offense just is destroyed by injuries.
This might as well be another incomplete. Yes. Yeah. Impossible.
So what I did was because Mike McCarthy wasn't calling plays, I graded him by his assistant hires. And again, Kellen Moore didn't do much. Like, there's not much to say. But given that he had to fire Mike Nolan after his first year, that's where the bad grade comes from. And also, the team went from sixth in DVOA in 2019 to 23rd. The reason that they ended up with such a poor record in their last season with Jason Garrett was because they lost a bunch of close games. And that was in large part because Jason Garrett mismanaged them. But that team was talented coming in, even though they lost a couple of players.
Yeah, we were very bullish on them this season. Yeah. You were much more than me, but
I can't really feel too bad, even though they probably weren't quite as good as I thought they were, even with everyone healthy. But again, with Dak injured, like, there's nothing to say.
Even me, who was probably the least bullish person on the Cowboys coming into the season, had them at 9-7.
Yeah.
So it's hard to grade them on any of these, really, except for like rookies.
So let's grade the rookies. What grade did you give them?
I actually gave them an A-.
Ooh, wow.
As much as I was not a huge fan of Trayvon Diggs, I was really impressed by CeeDee Lamb and Neville Gallimore this season. I thought they outperformed any expectations that I had for them coming in. And if we're doing this based off of expectations versus like how they actually did, I can't say I was mad at them. I thought they played pretty well. And you were saying how you actually kind of like Trayvon Diggs. So
here's the thing. The Trayvon Diggs thing is very much a relative to expectations thing. So I'll just start. I gave them a C. I honestly don't remember anything about what Neville Gallimore did this year, so I want to watch him a little bit more before I can make any declaration on him. But agreed, CeeDee Lamb looks very good. He's probably a luxury pick, given how much talent they already had at wide receiver, but they're always drafting for best player available when they took him, so that's fine. So yeah, here's the thing. Trayvon Diggs was clearly a developmental prospect when he came into the league. I think that he got better over the course of the season, which was all I wanted to see from him, really. He was really raw coming into the league. He was pretty much just all athleticism. So given that he showed them anything, I think that they can probably be happy with that, even though he's not a good cornerback yet by any means.
For sure. And he also got thrown in the deep end. So like,
he did.
What can you expect? He's
covering
to
DK
play
Metcalf in like week three.
Yeah. And he started to, and he definitely improved from that faster than any other cornerback improved this season, just because when you're put against the best, you have to sort of come to be a little bit like the best. And he was nowhere near that, but yeah. He developed some important tendencies, which will definitely help him in development.
Yeah, I agree. And then two other rookies that I took a look at, Terrence Steele, who was an undrafted free agent. He wasn't great, but he was expected to play left tackle as an undrafted free agent. He allowed the second most sacks in the league for tackles. So like, again, undrafted left tackle. What are you supposed to do? Yeah.
You didn't even draft him in like seven rounds of drafting.
Yeah, and then Tyler Biadasz was also pretty mediocre. He was a fourth-round pick. Like, maybe he'll get better.
And we only know who these people are because of injuries.
Exactly. Really, they were just forced to play. The vibes were not great after Dak got hurt. I gave them a D just because no one cared really around the team as soon as Dak got hurt. I think that everyone just sort of shut it down at that point.
So I give them a C simply because the vibes when Dak was healthy were immaculate. He was looking like that offense was on pace for insane records. So I just gave them that little nudge from those four games, and then I put them up to a C.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't actually think the vibes were that great when Dak was healthy, because the problem was, as good as Dak was and as good as the offense was, their defense was letting them down game after game. I think they were only 2-2 when Dak got hurt, maybe worse. Because the defense was so terrible.
Come back.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you remember that one.
Comeback. I just hear comeback. I don't know who it was against or anything.
No.
But I remember it was like wild and that there's like a 0.1% chance of them winning at one point.
Can't imagine who would give up that.
No. I don't think any NFL team could possibly be that horrendous in the fourth quarter. Anyways.
Moving on, so you don't need to ruminate on that. Offseason outlook. I didn't think it was actually quite as interesting, but what grade did you give them?
I give them a B. They got a lot of money, too. They'll get Dak back. I think that the Cowboys need to fix so much, and I think time will also help just because maturity in their young guys will will hopefully get them better. They got a good draft pick. I don't know. Maybe they'll go up in overall levels. Because right now they got a lot of young guys. So maybe a more overall, stronger, all-encompassing team.
It's just a lot of buzzwords right there. Yeah, the problem is they've got $19 million in cap space before signing Dak, but Dak's franchise tag is going to be around $37.5 million, which is going to be around 20% of their cap. They will franchise tag him, but that's leading them up to having to pay him a massive amount of money, or they let him walk after the season, which, given how we've seen how many good teams have been completely screwed and had their, I guess, Super Bowl windows, but really just any chance of competing, just blown out of the water because they didn't have a quarterback. I think it's pretty clear that they can't afford to let Dak go. So they probably need to bite the bullet and give Dak a mega extension, which I think he deserves pretty clearly. Jerry Jones just doesn't want to do it. I'm converting you slowly. Secondly,
slowly.
Yeah. It's also hard to build your team when you're paying $9.6 million for your second best running back. I said it.
Interesting take.
I stand by it. Also, they've got to overhaul their defense because they're losing their two defensive backs that played the highest percentage of snaps for them, and two out of the four defensive linemen that played the most for them. They're losing a lot of minutes or whatever on the field, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
So that's not necessarily a bad thing because they weren't all that good when they had these players on the field, but they need to find replacements at those positions.
And free agency tends to be flooded with defensive backs. Yeah. So It won't. They're not going to be coming back with a top 10 secondary next year, but they'll definitely be able to improve because right now they're starting at the bottom, and they'll be able to pick up some mediocre guys, maybe a Nickell Robey Coleman, something like that.
Robey Coleman. Well, we talked about him earlier. He had some problems this year, so I'm not sure if they want him. But it's finding your Ronald Darby, which is what it is. Finding that like $1 million guy, like on a cheap, almost veterans minimum contract, and turning him into something at the very least.
Into a Jason Verrett.
I love Jason Verrett.
We all do.
Yep. Oh, wait, sorry, Adam. What's your overall grade for the Cowboys?
I mean, I would give them an incomplete, but I give them a C just because I don't want to grade them this year.
Exactly. I gave them a D/incomplete, mostly just because I was so...
A D for DiNucci.
DiNucci. Yeah, the expectations were so high, and they never really had a chance, but... still disappointing.
And still a great wide receiver core.
I'm very excited for that for next year. But that is it for this week's episode. Next week, I think we'll probably do another report card. I'm not sure what division yet. If you want us to do your division, let us know. Maybe we'll do that. If not, we'll probably do a couple more report cards. Then we have free agency coming up in a couple weeks, and we will definitely do like a free agents pairing episode or something like that. That should be really fun. And then do some draft stuff. We've got this whole offseason planned out, but if there's anything you want us to do, we've got plenty of time. So just let us know.
And also, your feedback is always appreciated. If you disagree with any of these grades, which you almost undoubtedly do, let us know. We love feedback. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.